missed out on the 2020 party scene. But whilst we wait for better times that are surely on their way, I have set out to celebrate the best parties, as well as gaining exclusive insight on what it takes to create your very own once-in-a-lifetime party experience, wherever you may be. I've been chatting to people who have been involved in some of the biggest parties and events, and we've talked about debaucherous nights, world-famous behind-the-scenes photographs, and the absolute styling necessities when creating the perfect table setting. There is so much more to come. In the next few episodes, I'm going to speak to restaurateurs, fashion editors, and club promoters for an insight into their most memorable moments. I'm Claire Berry, and this is The Greatest Party in the World. Today's guest on the podcast is Baye Garnett, fashion stylist, editor, and author, known as the Queen of Thrift. Currently, she is a senior fashion advisor for Oxfam, a contributing fashion editor for British Vogue, and since lockdown started, prolific podcaster with her podcast, This Old Thing. So good to see you, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really nice to be here.
Before we get into all the fantastic work that you do with Oxfam, let's start at the beginning. How was it growing up in the Garnett household with two sisters? So you were one of three. Were you guys fighting over clothes, or were you living in harmony?
No, I was really the only one that was really into clothes.
Yeah.
It was pretty harmonious on the whole. I loved dressing up from an early age, and my sisters, not in the same way, actually. But yeah, my Rose is 3 years older than me, and my sister Daisy is 2 years older than me.
Oh, so you're the baby.
I'm the younger, exactly. I'm the baby. So yeah, we're very close, and we've remained close.
Yeah.
We all do quite different things in our careers, actually. And yeah, my elder sister's the head of film at BBC, so she's kind of film, and my other sister is a writer and also a brilliant gardener, so she does that, and obviously I work with clothes, so we have very different, we stay in lane.
Stay in lane, but super creative. Yeah. You know, when you were growing up, tell me about the parties and celebrations. How did you guys used to celebrate Christmas and parties in your family?
Yeah, it was lovely. We lived in Somerset, and we had this really big room. It was an old converted kind of barn, and my parents did it up, and it was gorgeous, big paintings and beautiful with huge windows. And every Christmas my dad would get a huge Christmas tree and make it. And my mum had a rule, being the atheist that she is, that no coloured balls, no pink, no orange. So it was beautiful tree of just silver and gold. And then these lights that used to take my dad hours to put up. So it was really like the tree looked unbelievable. And so Christmas, but listening to Billie Holiday and Louis Armstrong. So I remember it really well. And then my parents are quite sociable. So they had always like kind of Christmas parties, people round, and really happy days. And that thing of just that Christmas spirit of jolliness, you know? And
yeah,
as you say, like that party spirit, you know, so fun.
So fun. You studied art history and modern history. How was uni life? And were you part of all the societies? Did you, you know, get involved, or did you kind of...
No, I wasn't really I don't think any tutor of mine would remember me. I definitely wasn't a standout student. I did love art history, and I thought that I loved that. But I wasn't, my boyfriend was actually at Oxford, and I really missed him. So I used to drive up to see him a lot and then come to London. So, and actually at university, I spent a lot of time going to charity shops as well, and smoking a lot of dope. And, you know, but I definitely, and then going out dancing at the crappy, what was it called, Thunderbolts or something, you know, like getting pissed on really cheap beer and then going to dance at Vaults. That was it.
Yeah,
Vaults on the exit, you know, on the pier kind of thing. So yeah, good student life.
Yeah.
Everyone's skin.
Yeah.
Stoned. Yeah. Basically.
And did you, you know, what were you wearing back at uni? I mean, you said that you sort of first got into charity shops.
I mean, kind of, my style hasn't really changed.
Amazing.
I got into charity shops. So finding sweaters, shirts, denim, you know, just something that stands out to me, you know. It's hard to put my finger on, but I kind of, yeah, I have always slightly kept the same style. Within that, kind of can really go off into different things, but I guess it's that thing with charity shops and normal shops, is it's just that thing of something that just, you know, you spot it and that's, you just know straight away that it's for you.
Did you go, take friends when you went, used to go sort of out hunting, you know, for clothes, or was it very much as a solo thing? Or
no, it was a solo thing.
Yeah.
Because it was quite, you know, it was like a half an hour drive to the local seaside towns.
Yeah.
And, you know, I, no one else wanted to do it. And also, I like being on my own.
Yeah.
I like doing that stuff on my own. I like not, I, as much as I love parties and chatting to people and dancing, I love not being with people.
Yeah.
Just vibing by yourself, like putting the music on, going for the drive and no pressure. You know, I just, I've always liked that about thrifting.
From that, did you always know that you wanted to be a stylist?
No, I didn't actually. I didn't really have goals in that way. I just... no, I didn't. I thought I was going to go into the art world, actually. And then I just started really thrifting. I got a job in New York, assisting someone in an office. And in my holidays, well, not holidays, but, you know, weekends, lunch, I would go to all the thrift stores like Salvation Army. And I just started thrifting a lot. And then I worked on Cheap Date magazine, which was all about thrifting. So I guess styling was something that I arrived at through secondhand clothes.
Wow, that's amazing. And so, you know, I guess when you went to uni, you were studying art history. Did you think you were going to, like, headed for a gallery or to, you know, to be an artist in your own right?
I never thought I was going to be an artist. I'm definitely not an artist in any kind of technical or kind of, you know, real sense, you know. But so, no, I guess I wasn't sure. Actually, I worked at the Guggenheim Museum in Venice and I did that. And I wasn't sure, you know, I was still quite young, really, when I did move to New York, and I'd done kind of odd jobs and stuff. But yeah, looking back, it's kind of, I don't know why I wasn't more kind of focused. I wasn't one of those, ever one of those people that was like, right,
this is
what I want and that's what I'm going to do. I think that's really, really good to be like that. But I was never like that.
And you worked for some photographic agencies, is that right, in New York?
Yeah, as an assistant
in
an office, exactly.
What were the parties like in New York whilst you were there? Did you used to go out a lot, or was it, you know,
oh my God,
living
amazing.
On the... Really?
Oh, my God. I threw some incredible parties because I did this with my friend. We did a fanzine called Cheap Date, and every time we had a launch of the magazine, fanzine, we'd have a massive party to celebrate it. And we'd have, it was just amazing because it was when New York was kind of 97, 98. So kind of pre-9/11, obviously. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just like these wild, amazing parties where lots of kind of famous people came. Kate Moss, Keith Richards, Moby, Giselle, all these people would turn up. But our philosophy was, if you knew about the party, then you could.
You were welcome. Yeah.
And so it made for this amazing mix of people. I hated, it was like an antidote to that New York culture. It was very heavy in that culture in New York at that time, where it was all about exclusion, really.
Yeah.
I mean, not for me, because no. I knew people and I, you know, whatever, like I got into clubs and stuff, but it's just lame. That kind of, you know, like, no, you're not cool enough to come in. You're not this enough to come in. And I was just, we just felt like if you'd heard about the party, then you could come in.
Yeah.
And oddly, it just made for an amazing mix because it was so really authentic.
Yeah. Where were the parties?
In a nightclub called Don Hills.
Okay.
Which was an 80s, been around since the 70s.
Wow.
In the sense, but they did a lot of, when I say 80s, 70s, 80s, and a lot of, you know, like a real New York classic dive. And the guy who owned it was called Don Hill. And he'd been there for years. So, you know, we'd have it at Don Hill's. And then one, we had it at this incredibly posh place because the people had heard that it was cool. So they were like, you know what, you can have it here.
Wow.
And so we went, it was all like velvet and incredible. So we were like, oh, you know, this is really fun to do it somewhere really kind of swanky that we never could have afforded. And then we would take it back to Don Hills.
Yeah.
Because that's where. But yeah, like amazing people just dancing. And that's what it was about. It was about dancing and the fun. It was not about, it was nothing corporate about it. There was nothing. It was just, it was real.
And how could people get Cheap Date? Like, it was it like.
We sold it at the party?
You did. Okay, cool. Yeah.
People could buy it at the party. We sold it in newsagents. We sold it in vintage stores. You know, there was no such thing as online then. So, you know, wherever you could get it. But the print ones were small. And then we had a distributor. So like ICA, Art Galleries, Tate Modern, they would do it around in America. Like you could buy it at
MoMA.
I think even MoMA, like it definitely had like quite a culty, small circulation. But we did have a very cool small distributor, but other than that, I would take it to thrift stores and they'd sell it, and it wasn't ever going to make anyone rich, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, sort of set you up for, you know, the experience to sort of do loads of other stuff. Was it just you and your friend, like on the?
Yeah, but then we had lots of contributors, like Debbie Harry was on the cover, and Chloe Sevigny, and all these people, because it was really an antidote. It was called The Thinking Thrifter.
Yeah.
It's the byline, and it was kind of the antidote to sort of fashion magazines and stuff. So doing really fun things inside, and it was great. It was really fun. So people wanted to be a part of it because it was kind of well-meaning.
Yeah. I bet you those editions are sort of, you know, well sought after.
Yeah, I think you can get them on eBay and stuff. But yeah, they go for a bit of money.
Yeah,
now.
I bet they do. That's amazing.
Not huge, but, you know.
It's sort of like come full circle almost, you know, like a magazine about thrifting is now sort of an inspired vintage piece that, you know.
I know, it's funny, isn't it? I know.
So in 2002, you worked as a style director for the iconic and legendary Matthew Williamson. How did that come about? Did you come back to London and sort of start working with him?
Yeah, my friend said, oh, you should meet Matthew Williamson. He's looking for someone, a stylist. And, you know, so I met with him and he said, could you show me 5 ideas that you would do if you were going to work for me? And I showed him 5 ideas and that was the beginning of it, really. And, you know, we worked together for a long time, and we had a very... very close relationship.
Yeah.
Out of all the things I always forget about working with, I don't know why. So it's nice to actually remember it and talk about it. I don't know why. It's just kind of one of those ones that slightly slides away.
Yeah.
Remember, never think about it.
I mean, his pieces, though, are such beautiful party, you know, statement gowns. Yeah.
They were very much of a time.
Yeah,
exactly. They were very much of a time, and I think that a lot of fun was had in lots of his dresses.
Yeah, beautiful,
for sure.
Beautiful print. Do you remember any of the 5 ideas that you presented?
Yeah, I presented a sweatshirt that I found in a thrift store, sweatshirt, and then at the top it was Will Ferrell. So it was this really odd thing, but it was really original. And then this really good Victoriana blouse. This was a long time ago. So it was kind of when this, it was all thrift store finds. I remember the Ferrell sweatshirt really well. Then what happened to the original, actually? I must have got rid of it.
Yeah. Oh God, I can imagine you must have, what do you do? How do you sort of?
I've got rid of so much. I wish I hadn't. I have got over the years because I had so I've collected so much that I think also sometimes I'd say to myself, you have to get rid of stuff. And I don't know why I did that.
So it's interesting that you say, because I'm in like an antithesis to Marie Kondo, let's say. You know, if it doesn't spark joy, get rid of it. I've done that and really regretted some of the stuff that I've done. So
that's just her.
You know what I mean? Like, but I, you know, and I genuinely, so what do you, well, do you just get another lockup? Like, and just, you know.
I have got rid of a lot. If you saw my wardrobe, you'd probably be a bit like, meh, you know, but because I have got rid of a lot. Also, you know, I've got kids and stuff. And I think that for me, when I had kids, I kind of, that stuff, I went through a real phase where that stuff became less important to me.
Yeah.
Because I was preoccupied by other stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess it's only now, really, you know, my son's 15 and whatever, like my daughter's 12, but it's only more recently that I go back to that stuff and I think, oh man, I wish I had it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any like key pieces in particular that you think of that was like, oh, I wish I hadn't have sold?
Like this brilliant like blue top with these huge velvet with like these huge amazing sleeves, and then like a Christian Dior brown cape with like metallic tassels, 70s. I mean, a lot of stuff actually.
Has, yeah. But I guess you can, you know, you always must think there's always something else out there.
And also, ultimately, you know, it doesn't really matter.
No.
Do you know what I mean? No. It's just annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Talk to me about Vogue and how you sort of came about that role. Was it after Matthew?
Basically, it was during Matthew. And I, as I said, I worked on this fanzine called Cheap Date. And in it, I did these fake campaigns. So I used all charity shop clothes, but like Yves Saint Laurent became Salvation Army, and Calvin Klein became Cancer Care, and Charity Donor became Christian Dior, and Burberry became Borrowed, and Poached, Prada became Poached. But they had the kind of gloss and the finish of a real campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And they were shot by really big photographers and stuff like Glenn Lutchford, Craig McDean. So I did those, and Alex Shulman, the then editor of Vogue, someone, and I don't know how, but showed her a copy of the magazine of Cheap Date. And so she said, you know, would you come in and have a meeting?
Were you terrified?
Do you know what? I was so not.
Oh, really?
So not into fashion. I was kind of doing my thing. I was fine.
Cool.
I was like, oh, that's kind of exciting. But I wasn't at all terrified because I really hadn't been aspiring to get into fashion.
Sure.
I was kind of into thrifting. Felt like the opposite of fashion. Felt like the rejection of fashion to some extent. I didn't really understand fashion as like this thing where someone produces clothes and then you buy it for like £1,500. I didn't really understand it. I understand it now, of course, because I've worked in it. But at the time, for me, that was like, oh, man, what?
Yeah.
I didn't really get it. I really didn't, because I'd never worked in fashion. And although I'd been around it to some extent in ways, I had
taken another approach.
It was really authentic. But then I got to do my first fashion story with Kate Moss, and using all my thrift store clothes. And so that was really fun, you know. So she was brilliant as an editor. She let me bring in secondhand.
I mean, and I don't think anyone else was doing it at the time, were they? Not so much. No, it was
It was quite new. I mean, you know, but I think it really is only recently that people have really got more into secondhand clothes.
Yeah.
Without it being really niche, you know, like vintage, very expensive.
Yeah. How was it received? Like, you know, you're meeting with her. What was, you know, with Alexandra, what was...
Because I guess I wasn't going up for a job interview. Like, she'd asked me to go in and talk to her. So I hadn't applied for a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I was more kind of like, well, what's it going to be? Like, I mean, and also kind of nervous, because you go into the office and and but I felt also quite laid back. And I remember saying, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, can I do a story using all my favourite thrift store clothes? Because I didn't really know. Well, I'd never done a fashion shoot before, so
I know what I know how to do that.
That's what I know how to do.
Yeah,
you know, and that shoot went on to be quite a well-known shoot, actually. With Kate Moss wore this banana top that then got copied, and quite a lot of the stuff got copied from fashion houses, whatever. And it's become quite a kind of, it's one of those fashion shoots that's
referenced.
Survived the test of time because it was charity shop. And I did it with an old friend of mine called Anita Pallenberg. And we used her clothes, and she was quite a famous icon.
Yeah. Like
60s and 70s style. So, you know, the combination, it just sort of worked. Yeah.
Amazing. You're an advisor for Oxfam, which, you know, feels like it's a job that you're passionate about, considering your roots. What does it mean to sort of work for them and sort of such an iconic brand and, you know, have such a long history with them, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I love doing stuff with Oxfam. It started very organically. I got a call saying, would you consider doing a fashion show using secondhand clothes, using Oxfam clothes? So that's how it started. And that was a few years ago. So we did two fashion fighting poverty shows. I did a pop-up with Oxfam last September in Selfridges. And the idea was to go in the space of luxury. So on the floor where Gucci and Miu Miu and Prada is. So they, you know, we designed a kind of a luxury store. So Oxfam was all velvet and gold and like really plush. So you were kind of right in between, you know.
It's like, you know, it has every, you know, right to be in, dressed in that space and, you know.
Exactly, except the clothes were sold for Oxfam prices. So everything was about sort of perception, really.
Yeah.
And about sort of transforming, if you transform the space and the branding and the marketing, as it were, then what? That's really interesting. And it was interesting because I thought it was really interesting because it changes your perception of the clothes that are being sold. And then it was really good. And it was really successful, which is great. People bought lots of stuff. I did the edit so I worked on the edit with the Oxfam Festival team.
How many pieces do you pull for that? If the pop-up's open for 2 weeks, let's say.
It was a month.
A month.
Is it a month? Yeah, it was a month.
What happens when you sell all the pieces?
September. Yeah, well, new pieces come down.
Right, yeah.
And then because it was COVID, usually I'd go up to the warehouse, but instead they'd get the pieces down and then it would go down to the basement and then I would edit from the basement.
Wow.
And yeah, and I was like, I'd always be like, no, All Saints. No, sorry, All Saints. No, whatever. Like, no, this has to be, you know, I really wanted it to be like a place like have really good pieces and special pieces. So, but I'm actually doing one again this September.
Amazing!
Yeah, in a different part of Selfridges. It's going to look completely different. Which
great,
is really exciting. So it's going to be like a whole new idea. And that coincides with Secondhand September, and that's a campaign that I've worked on with Oxfam. So the first person we did it with was Stella Tennant and her daughter, and then last year we did a campaign with Michaela Cole, who was the face. So it's a big moment for Oxfam and for me actually. It's Secondhand September, and it's so the shop and the face, and it's to try and, you know, sort of put the messaging out there of, you know, buy secondhand.
Yeah, and so that's so great to think that it will actually happen again this September in real life.
I know, I'm so pleased. So you have to come. It launches at the moment. I'm actually going to get the space tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
It launches on the 6th of September.
Amazing. What? And this is such a hard question, but I have to ask you, what is your best ever secondhand find?
It would have to be the banana top that I used on Kate Moss in my first Vogue shoot.
Yeah.
That I found in a thrift store uptown in New York.
Amazing.
$10 and it's...
It's just become... I think I know the shirt and I think I know the image now that you said it, you know.
Yeah, it's just had a story. I wonder what the story was before, but it's just kind of had a story. And I love it as well. I don't wear it anymore.
Have you got it?
I've still got it. Yeah. I mean, I can't wear it anymore because it wouldn't fit me, but I used to wear it a lot, you know, 20 years ago.
And your amazing podcast, This Old Thing, how did it come about? I noticed that the first episode launched during lockdown, same as ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'd always wanted to do a podcast. I mean, probably like you, right? I just always wanted to explore it.
Yeah. I thought it'd be, yeah.
Right? Why not?
Exactly.
You know, why not? Well, what's the worst that can happen? Everyone hates you. but I just, I did one season and...
I loved the Chloe Sevigny.
Did you?
Oh my God, she's just such a legend. She's got stylish and cool pouring out of her.
I mean, she really does.
She's just, I don't know.
I know. I dated her brother actually for quite a long time.
Did you? Amazing. When you were living over there in New York?
Yeah, we have the same birthday actually, so every year.
Oh, it's your birthday twin.
Exactly. It's cheers on me. Yeah, hi, big. Oh, so sweet. He's got this sweet voice, but yeah.
Very, very cool. What's the best party you've ever been to?
Do you know what? One of the best parties I've ever been to would have to be in New York. Q-Tip was DJing hip-hop.
Amazing. Huge.
I was there with two guy friends of mine who I love, my friend Angel, my friend Alex. And we danced. We fucking just danced to hip-hop for like 5 hours.
Where was the party?
Met a great guy. Woo! Had some fun. It was just basically like, you know, one of those nights. It was just so
really random, but
totally.
And
it wasn't even like a big party. It was like, but it kind of was. It was just one of those nights where it was about dancing and just getting in the zone.
Yeah,
like being there. And but I've been to lots of parties and probably a cheap date party.
Yeah.
Probably a cheap date party.
Did you? So you actually...
Everyone was dancing and I went up to Giselle and I was like, hi, can I take your picture for the next pinup for cheap date? She was like, yeah, sure. And all these people were just, you know, it was just crazy. But like, people literally letting their hair down, just hair everywhere and everyone dancing. And I think for me, so it would have to be a cheap date party or this hip hop night, because, you know, it's about, for me, with a good party, I just love dancing.
Yep.
So I love chatting, but there has to be some good dancing in there as well.
Yeah. Have you got any tips for people who, you know, coming out of lockdown, well, coming out of lockdown, we're kind of, you know, one step closer, got the summer parties, barbecues, you know, but a bit time poor. Would they go to eBay?
Definitely. Get loads of really great stuff from there. Like, God, I mean, I'm looking at the moment for a coffee table and I found really good ones. Yeah. So I'm just, then I'm like, oh, God, do I buy it now or should I wait? But yeah, I mean, I love it. I love that you can, I found Brilliant Supreme. Yeah. I love that you can kind of find what you want on there.
Yeah.
If you're secondhand, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. I really like secondhand cookbooks, you know, or, you know, like old cookbooks.
You love cooking.
I really like cooking and entertaining, but books, hardback books. I actually bought the Madonna sex book the other day.
Wow.
I'd never even thought about it.
Is it kind of amazing?
It's, the photography is quite, I mean, not that I wasn't surprised about how sort of, you know, provocative it was, but it really was quite provocative.
Was it really?
She's such a legend. Such a legend.
She really didn't care what people thought.
She just, you know, and just so ahead of her time. Yeah.
Amazing thing that she's over 60 now, isn't it? How did that happen?
Oh, I know.
Right?
I did an event with for her at Soho House Berlin. They took over the whole hotel, two floors of Soho House Berlin Hotel. And, you know, it was something I will never forget, that's for sure.
I bet.
But I'm going to do some quick fire.
Yeah.
Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Your one toolkit necessity?
Safety pin.
Are you the first or the last to leave a party?
I would say in the middle, actually. Yeah. Don't know, that's not a great place to be, maybe.
No, but it's
I think
a great place to be.
I'd say in the middle.
Yeah. Tracksuit or tailored suit?
Tracksuit.
Intimate gathering or everyone's invited?
Intimate gathering.
Nice. Less is more or more is more?
More is more. Right?
Absolutely. More is more. And your go-to party piece, what's something that you put on and, you know, finishes a party outfit?
Lots of eyeliner.
Nice. Very nice. Lovely. Faye? Thank you for joining my podcast.
Thank you so much. It was lovely talking to you.
This podcast was produced by Curious More Productions and recorded at Soho Radio.